You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Joe Mayer, John Paccio, Tony Longshanks, Don Merrill, Kanan Schlesinger, and Danielle Beaker. The producer is Lisa Loving. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio News. Our engineer is Danielle Parks. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Jamani Ward-Lewis.
And I'm Kanan Schlesinger. Coming up tomorrow on KBOO, at 7 it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on Wednesday Talk Radio, host Paul Rowland speaks with longtime climate activist and writer Patrick Mazza about his hunger strike for climate justice on the steps of the Capitol in Olympia, Washington. At 9, we speak with local activist Sandy Polishuk of 350 PDX about efforts to get the state of Oregon, Metro, and other governing bodies to divest from fossil fuels. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with Dennis Bernstein. And 11, on the Dirtbag, host Glenn Anderson and guest Jim Gilbert discuss summer weed control and watering, pruning fruit trees in the summer, and Jim's garden travels to Italy. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. And please tune in this Thursday for our 25-hour KBOO-a-thon to support KBOO starting at 6 a.m. Good night, Jamani.
Good night, Kanan.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Portland Public School Board Director Paul Anthony recently filed a federal complaint against Portland Public Schools for racial inequities. In the evening news in depth, Anthony speaks with KBOO's Don Merrill about his motivation and plans for change. Check our website for the full hour interview, and here is a 15-minute excerpt.
I'm Don Merrill, and I'm talking with Paul Anthony. Mr. Anthony is a member of the school board for Portland Public Schools. Mr. Anthony, welcome.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
Mr. Anthony, you recently filed a federal complaint against Portland Public Schools, and I want to talk a little bit about that. But I want to start out by reminding people, when did you become a school board member? What motivated you to run, and when did you decide to run and become a member of the school board?
I was motivated to run because I have three children in the public schools. For the last 14 years, I've lived right by Jefferson High School. I have seen a lot of problems in the district. My own children have done fabulously. They have benefited enormously from their experience in the district, but an awful lot of their compatriots have not. And I wanted to see those children served as well as my own are. I won an election in the last primary, May of 2015, and was sworn into the board the beginning of July 2015. So I've been on just over a year now.
When you decided to file this complaint about the Portland Public Schools, did you contemplate that there was a problem with Portland Public Schools as you were running?
Oh, yes. The parent community and school advocates out in the community have known for many years that there was this problem, that courses were not distributed equitably, that they were not even distributed equally across the schools, and that children were suffering because of it. For years, parents and even the district's own committee members had been asking for exactly this information. What courses are offered at what schools? And they had not been able to get it. When I was on the board, I was finally able to get a copy. It took a very long time. I had to talk to quite a few people, and it ended up coming to me in a very quiet way from people who did not want to be associated with the exchange. Once I was able to lay it out so that we truly could compare school to school, the differences are absolutely appalling.
You had a meeting with Carol Smith. Apparently, Ms. Smith met with every school board candidate before their election, before the school board election last year. What did you all discuss in that meeting?
I remember that we discussed broad concerns with the district, concerns with equity, concerns with the boundary redraw process that was underway.
So then those questions did come up in your first meeting.
The focus of our conversation, what did I hope to accomplish? And what tools did I hope to use in order to be able to do that? I have a great deal of experience in finance, and one of the areas that I know needs to be addressed very much is the district's budget. More and more, I have come to the sad conclusion that the budget is designed to obscure rather than to make clear. And one of the results of that budget are exactly these inequities in classes.
So talk to me about the January 26th meeting and how that was, you know, the equity discussion writ large over the previous meeting.
Yes. Well, between meeting with Ms. Smith in, I think, April of 2015 and January of 2016, I'd been able to get these course lists. I'd been able to lay out the material in a way that made it easy to draw comparison.
I wonder sometimes if there isn't a bit of obstructionism going on.
Oh, yes. I think that your summary is a very, very fair one. That's exactly right. In the case of Ockley Green, even that information being presented to the community and presented to district administration did not sway the argument. What did was community members taking that information and saying, all right, here is our plan for how you are going to address this. Here is our plan for opening up Ockley Green as a middle school this coming fall. And they laid out the district's job for it. Right now, people in the Tubman community and people in the Roseway Heights community are doing the same things. And that's how we're really going to make change happen.
I wanted to ask you about the data. Now, you said that this is publicly available information, but was very difficult to get, and you were able to get it through a lot of unnamed sources. So this is information that was compiled by the school or compiled by third parties that the school hired to compile it?
No, this is information that is compiled by the school district. They have one computer system, it's called Synergy, that handles all of the academic issues. It keeps track of all the classes and where they are. It keeps track of each student's achievement, what their grades are, what their credits are, how they are progressing towards graduation. And it takes a download from that computer system. That's what the courses are. I was only able to get that list in hard copy. And I had to stop and think about when it was that that became available, because it's an enormous list. It's over 37 are offered at all of the schools all across the district. And in order to be able to use that, I had to be able to type it into Excel and then tag each course with its school, with what type of class it was, whether or not it was an advanced course that offers college credit.
So then you're saying you had to transpose all this information yourself.
Oh, yes.
From paper to an Excel spreadsheet.
Yes. It was a more than 25,000 cell spreadsheet by the time I was done with it. And then two people in the community who are very good at data analysis helped me sort through it and arrange it in a way that is explicable to people.
What were you able to discover in terms of inequities? I read something about how there's a difference, a huge difference, mostly the article pointed out huge differences between Lane and Mount Tabor.
That is one very good example, and it's one that's very compelling to me emotionally. Mostly I try and keep these issues very dry. I try and focus on the numbers because, very frankly, the emotional issues and seeing how it hits kids simply make me too angry. When I had the opportunity, I went out and toured Lane Middle School. Lane is in outer southeast Portland. It serves one of our very poorest neighborhoods. It serves many homeless children. It serves many children who are living in tents on the Springwater Trail. It has a lot of social issues. But the principal took me around Lane, and one of the things she wanted me to see was the band class, which is a wonderful class. The children played for me. That was fabulous. And then she asked them if there was one thing they wanted a school board member to know, what was it? And one little African-American girl in the middle of the band, she was playing the clarinet. She put her hand up and she said, "I wish that we had the same kind of programming that I hear they get to have at Mount Tabor."
How old was this little girl?
Oh, she was probably 13 years old. Now, Lane is about 40% white. Mount Tabor is the next middle school into Portland. Mount Tabor is about 60% white. Mount Tabor has 24 different elective offerings. Lane has half that, 12. Even our children are aware of the differences, and even our children know why those differences are there. It's because of race, it's because of income, and it's all an expression of political power.
Do you think there's a direct connection between what's happening in terms of disparities in the school treatment of poor schools and students, some students of color, and their eventual contact with law enforcement?
Oh, there absolutely is, and that's very well documented. The school-to-prison pipeline absolutely exists, and we are contributing to it. Also, I think what Mayor Adams tried to accomplish is very much what I'm having to resort to. We are both having to go outside of the system and get help from the federal government if we're going to actually impact the systems we are trying to serve.
As I read the papers and listen to the media and watch television, Portland is very proud of itself in a lot of ways. Portland portrays itself as a nirvana of progressivism, of democratic rights, of fair treatment. I have trouble sometimes connecting the dots.
One of the most important ways that that image of Portland is a lie is in Portland's treatment of its children. Increasingly, Portland is becoming a bad place to be a child. Portland is becoming a very difficult place to grow up. Nearly half of the children in our schools are living in poverty. And that's poverty by the federal guidelines, which are grossly below the cost of living in Portland, Oregon. Nearly a third of the children in our schools are at least what they now call food insecure, which essentially means that they're hungry pretty much all the time. When we take those children and put them through a system where they have so few options, so few opportunities to get any kind of education that supports them, that interests them, that keeps them engaged in school, so that by the time they get to high school, they've given up. There are enormous social problems that are going to come from that. And yes, that's going to include being grossly disproportionately impacted by the criminal justice system.
Mr. Anthony, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. Thank you very much.
You are very welcome. Very happy to.
I'm Don Merrill. I've been talking with Paul Anthony. He is a current member of the Portland Public School Board. Thanks for listening.
This is KBOO Portland.